Broadcasting live from an Airstream somewhere in Tornado Alley, bringing you the people, places, and stories from the Panhandle to the Red River. This is your Only in Oklahoma show.
And welcome to the show. You know, we've talked about buying local, staying local, and we had a chance to talk to Matt Winton at 116 Farmstead in Luther, Oklahoma. I'm Brett.
And I am Harley.
We talk local. We're kind of, we're hipsters about being a hipster without, I guess they call us boomers now.
No, we're not boomers.
Well,
we're not born during the baby boom.
I know, but you ask anybody that's 25 or younger, we're hashtag okay boomers.
We are enthusiastic about Oklahoma.
We are.
And I think that kind of steers us towards shopping local and being local.
Right. I mean, we talk to, that's kind of our bag because we talk to small town America all the time, which that's what runs the machine. Let's be realistic.
I think people are missing out when they drive past the small towns where we're talking to people every week.
Mm-hmm. And it's not just about Takeout Tuesday, which I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
Support local, great. You know, you bought from the local taco stand. That's great. All those things are great, but there's so much more to it than that.
I think more importantly, there's more things to uncover. There are more fun activities in this state that anybody gives it credit for. It's our job.
Right.
To talk about the fun and interesting parts of Oklahoma, and we are shocked every single time we hit the record button at the stuff we find along the way that we had no idea it existed.
And more to the point, this is no longer a white elephant in the room. We know that things have been restricted for some time, but what I will say, if you all are following Lieutenant Governor Matt Pinnell and the Tourism Department and the Agricultural Department, we're slowly starting to release the valve a little bit. We're kind of getting back to normal where we can finally start sitting down together again and kind of doing not just the takeout, drive-through, curbside stuff, restaurants. Okay, there are some downsides. Okay? You heard they're going to start clipping us at the gate for national parks here in Oklahoma.
Yeah, and well, for the state parks. And the thing is, and I'll probably catch some flack for this.
I'm sure.
I think it's probably necessary. It's $60 a year.
Yeah, that's not bad.
If you're from Oklahoma, if you've got an Oklahoma tag, it's $60 a year. I don't know how many times you go to a state park in a year, but I promise you my visit per charge is going to end up being something like 27 cents a visit.
No one, you heard some people, and I'm going to say it, kind of bitching a little bit when they increased the fishing and hunting licenses so many years ago. But value for value, dollar for dollar, we see where the money's going. It's helping. I don't know. It's a mixed bag. Here's the thing. Charge me all you want, but can we get back to, let's just get back to normal? Can we get to some, I hate this, there's this new thing that the new normal. No, I don't want the new normal. Can we just resume? Can we hit resume? We've been on pause. You know what I mean?
Right. I agree. And I think this is one of the things that I think people really need to be focused on. And we get into it really, really deep.
Oh, yeah.
In this coming up interview. But getting back to kind of having an idea where your food's from.
Right.
And being able to go talk to the guy who grew it.
Right. Buyer beware. I've said that many times. What looks like it's going to be an interview about a restaurant in Luther, America, turns out to be a socioeconomics class, the 411 of getting it done from farm to like the whole step, the whole process. And I'm okay with it.
Love the interview. Yeah. Matt is full of great information. Great guy. Really down to earth. I think people are really going to love it. And Luther is really close to the Oklahoma City metro area.
Absolutely.
Without being metro. It's a small town America, but it's 20 minutes away from Oklahoma City.
Here's the thing. I have nothing against, I will not mention names to out any small towns, as I use air quotes, but they have a super Target. That's not, this is different. This is another small town that's doing, leaps and bounds. It's way ahead of the curve. We'll get into it
right after this.
All right, 6 goes into 7. One is it? God, I'm so frustrated. I'm scared to death. I'm an independent contractor, and I don't want to get punched in the jimmy by the IRS.
Brett, why don't you give our buddy Justin over at the Holiday Tax Group a call? One of their specialties is tax preparation and planning. And then on top of that, if you have a run-in with the IRS, they're going to have your back.
Perfect. But how do I find them?
You can reach them at holidaytaxgroup.com. And if the independent contractor thing works out for you, they also do estate planning. So they got you back on that one as well.
Oh, thank goodness. Thanks for the advice. That's holidaytaxgroup.com. Holiday with two L's. Well, I think we've all at least heard the term farm to table, but our next guests are bringing something completely different to the table. It's Matt Winton with 116 Farmstead Market in Luther, Oklahoma. Matt, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. I'm happy to be on and to talk to you guys about farm to table and what's going on in Luther and hopefully other small towns in America.
Absolutely.
So, Matt, can you kind of just start us off with a primer? How did this start, and what's it all about?
Yes, it started in, well, like a lot of things do, it starts in starts and spurts and stops and redirections. But I'm originally from Fort Worth, Texas. Grew up working at the Fort Worth Stockyards, and have been around cattle. Knew I was going to be a cattleman at some point. And in 2003, my family bought some property out north of Luther. It's a much longer story of how I ended up here, but that's not really that pertinent to the story.
Well, I mean, you're supposed to be technically selling pecans, not pork chops.
Yeah. So, yeah, at that time, the cheapest land around and close enough to town where my wife didn't feel like she was out in the middle of nowhere was Northeast Oklahoma County. And so we bought 160 acres out there, started putting in the improvements, and a few years later, got our herd of cattle. And during that period of time, I had been working with a rancher down in Winniewood who is very well known in Oklahoma, Bruce Beekner, who has the No Name Ranch.
I thought you were going to say Joe Exotic. I'm sorry. Wrong kind of ranch.
No.
Okay, go ahead.
Completely different story. Okay. And different ranch.
All right, go
ahead.
Yeah,
and I think thanks to COVID, everybody knows where Winniewood is now. And
right?
That Joe Exotic. Yeah. It's a double-edged sword. So, but Bruce Beekner was very kind to me and basically let me apprentice on his ranch. So whenever he'd be working cattle, I'd go down there and got really good hands-on experience. But also, you know, everybody around here has their particular opinions on the best cattle breed. And of course, Bruce is no different. He raises Pinzgauer, which is a very, very old heritage Austrian breed. So I did my research, looked around, thought about different types of cattle that I wanted to raise, and Pinzgauer is a good one. So I've been raising Pinzgauer for it's about 12 years now. So it started with raising cattle, and then a friend of mine and I ended up buying one of the old buildings in downtown Luther. And I had lived north of Luther for number of years, didn't even know there was a downtown, and then drove through it, and I was just immediately struck. And so if you've never been to downtown Luther, you've probably seen its equivalent in any number of small towns that you might drive through in you know, the Southwest, Texas, anywhere. It's flagstone construction. Some of them are two-story, one-story. The buildings in downtown Luther happen to be built. Well, the one that me and my buddy own was built in 1897. I mean, these are pre-statehood structures. We really didn't know what we wanted to do with it, except we just knew that buildings like that need to keep standing and need to have something cool in them and cool done with them. There was, and this is one of my opportunities to go on a very long tangent, but I'll keep it short. So the economics of the small town dramatically changed from the 19th to the 20th century. There was a lot of drain from rural America to towns, which makes sense. You know, it's the mm-hmm. industrial age and better jobs, and who wants to dig potatoes or follow a cow around? So better economic opportunities. And it also not only changed the economics, the local economy, but it also changed the way people eat, just from time and growing their own food. It shifted from that, which had been done for centuries up to that point, to restaurants, takeout, grocery stores. And it changed not only the local economy, but it changed the local culture, the interaction that people have. And you've got World War II and guys coming home and even more growth of cities. And that's the time when you had the rise of suburbs, which are just these large tracts of land with residential. And it's not polyculture, it's monoculture for housing. And so I've got a little bit of experience, or had a little bit of experience, in the restaurant industry. And I pretty much attribute everything that I know on how to run a restaurant to the Blevins brothers, who started and run the City Bites mm-hmm. restaurants and cafes. They've also got the Cow Cafe. And so I worked for these guys when I was in college, and then for a little bit when I went to law school. They're very gracious in teaching me how to read a P&L. I was an English literature undergrad major, and had no clue what a P&L even stood for. And so these guys gave me a wonderful business education in terms of how to run a restaurant, the labor percentages, food cost, all of that stuff. So I knew how to do that. I knew how to set up a restaurant, the inventory system, and all of that. And so when it came time to decide what we were going to do with that building, we were already producing beef. We already were focused on, okay, what could be done to not necessarily compete with the city, because it's not a competition.
Right.
It's just a... And it's not a return to the glory days either. That nostalgia is fun sometimes, but it's not realistic.
Mm-hmm.
What it tries to do is reestablish within the local economy some of the elements that used to be there that got pushed to the side because they don't make as much money as other things, but that still need to be done. They sure. still need to be available, and that people will enjoy them. And that's kind of where the idea of, well, this is more like a church. It's not a money. I mean, we do charge for our food, but
right.
we did not go into this endeavor to retire rich off of it. It is not the money tree for our family. So we knew that going in. In fact, we set an amount out of our monthly budget that we would be comfortable with in terms of paying out. And we did that so that we could open a place that had as home cooked food as we could. We're not zealots or legalists by any means. And so they don't grow avocados in Oklahoma. And so we buy them from other places, and that's just fine. This isn't a purist endeavor, or how organic, or I'm so much more organic than you are kind of thing. That gets on people's nerves, and definitely gets on mine. Now, and we practice that with our beef as well. We have never been certified organic, and I can go into the reasons why, but we are most definitely an all natural product. And you have to spend a little time and dig in a little bit to know what your farmer or your rancher means when they say they're all natural.
So in your case, what exactly do you mean? I know what I think of when,
I think of
when
grass
I hear the
fed.
Words.
Yeah, I think of grass fed when I think of natural.
But let's
hear. And this is why this hits on one of the things that we were hopeful to do with the restaurant. And that's create a place where people might slow down a little bit and have these conversations. Cause I get asked that question a lot. Is your beef grass fed? The answer is yes. And in fact, unless you're eating veal, all beef is grass fed because cows eat grass. And right. So that you're asking and you're using language that the words mean something different than what's behind the question. And
right. It can almost sound elementary at times.
Yeah.
I think when most people say grass fed, what they mean is grass finished and not grain finished.
Right.
Which I'm assuming that's where you're going with that.
That's exactly right. Most people, when they say, is your beef grass fed? What they mean is, do you stick it in a nasty feedlot that you smell as you're driving out to Amarillo or some other place?
Or El Reno. You know, where you,
yeah. The spot where if you've ever hit it before, you turn on the, mm-hmm. the inside recycle button so that you don't have the fresh air coming in your truck or your car. And the answer is no. The quickest way to answer what we mean by all natural is focusing on the natural part. And so when you think in terms of how animals grow, how babies are conceived and how they're born, we follow a natural production method or protocol. So we don't use artificial insemination. We use a bull. And so we have bulls on our place that are in various stages of growth or production, and we use the natural cycles of cows to breed. There are hormones or shots that you can give the cattle that will sync their cycles, that you can have all your calves within a week or two, and it makes it very convenient. I understand that, but the thing is, there's things that we do in life and that we want to promote that we could do it cheaper, faster, cleaner. It could be more expedient, more convenient, but we don't. Because if that were the standard, we would never have children, right?
Absolutely.
Or if a profit motive were the goal. Now, there are some things that we do apply those to. I'm a lawyer by trade and bill by the hour. And so the faster I can do something, the more I can churn out, the better. But that's not the principle, the guiding principle when it comes to raising beef. It's not the guiding principle that we use in training employees and the staff that we want to attract to the cafe. Those are relationships, and we treat the relationships a little different.
And Matt, let me back up to the beef for a second. You know, back in the 80s, they used to have these undercover videos of slaughterhouses and killing floors and all this. And far as processing goes, you know, you're talking about cleanliness and kind of changing the view of how beef is produced and how it's processed. What is your process of processing your own beef?
Yes. So that's important too. Part of the natural process, and it would be nice if we didn't have to think about it.
Right.
And we could push it out of our minds sometimes. But if you're going to eat meat, you're going to kill.
Right.
It requires a death of something, in this case, the animal, in order to produce that beef. And in fact, in order to make sure that I don't forget that on my calendar, it says kill date. It doesn't say processing beef units on my calendar. Right.
I think that's how they make hot dogs.
yeah.
Those are beef units.
Yeah. You know, calling a living thing a production unit, it kind of rubs me the wrong way.
Right.
It's, now, we don't name our cattle except very few. We do number them in order to keep track, but they are living things and they need to be treated that way right up until the time you kill them and you process them.
Love
and,
it.
So that's part of the production is we don't beat the cattle. We don't yell at them, although we do have a cattle call that they come to. They know our voice. They know that I'm there to feed them and take care of them. And, that helps get them in the trailer. And so in terms of answering your question, the processing, we have a local butcher that we process at. It's the same butcher we've used for the 10 or 12 years we've been doing it. It's a state inspected facility. So state inspector comes and the beef is inspected. If we want it graded, we can, but we don't need it graded because we sell our own beef. We don't sell it to other restaurants.
Well, you know, in Japan, they massage the Kobe and the Wagyu. You guys do that?
Yes. And this is important. So if you look at the way ribeyes and the way beef is graded, you know, mm-hmm. you've got prime, choice, select, and everybody wants prime beef, and everybody knows that Wagyu beef is supposed to be some of the best, and it's definitely the most expensive. But if you put one of those Wagyu ribeyes next to one of ours, you're going to notice a significant difference, and that's the amount of fat in mm-hmm. those ribeyes. We've been trained as consumers that we want a real fatty ribeye. That's going to be the best, and that's not necessarily true. If you have good genetically tender beef, which Pinzgauer is, then you don't need it to be so fat, which also helps with the burgers. You can have a 90-10 or an 88-12 burger instead of a 70-30, which kind of makes me sick just saying it. And when I'm using those percentages, I'm talking about the percentage of beef versus fat. And now, fat's really tasty. Mm-hmm. I like it. But I don't want to drop dead of a heart attack by eating 70-30 beef.
Right.
And so if you can raise clean, non-fatty beef, well, then that's good too. So, we process at, our local butcher, and we sell the beef not only cooked in our, you know, we use our beef at the restaurant for the recipes, but also we sell in a freezer case as well. I used to sell quarters to, I had a bunch of quarter customers, but with this COVID thing, we're selling so much beef through the cafe that I don't have quarters available except just here and there. This whole COVID deal.
Oh yeah. This is crazy.
It's mind boggling.
And it's shooting the prices. Like if you're just a consumer and you don't have access to 116 Farmstead or your local, you're paying astronomical price. Have beef prices in Walmart and Winco and Crest, have they ever been this high? I just feel like they're almost gouging you.
Yeah.
And you're not even getting the quality. You know what I mean?
That's right. And so this raises another issue. And I hope this is one good thing that comes out of the whole COVID crisis. And that's food security.
Mm.
Well, there's no better food security than going to your backyard or your pantry or your neighbor or your local market. The idea that our food source is only as good as the trucks that continue running every 3 days to Walmart or Target. That's great as long as it works.
It's
and then when
scary.
It doesn't work, yeah. It's a really big problem.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, if what we get back to are the victory gardens or whatever you want to call them, mm-hmm. then wonderful. That's a good thing to come out of this, or at least the conversation of, okay, how can we thin this just-in-time inventory system that works really well? If the goal is to maximize profits and to streamline the process, there's nothing better than the American trucking system and the just-in-time idea. By the way, you're looking at a picture on your screen,
mm-hmm.
that all hat. So that's a an old photograph of my grandpa in front of his truck. He was a trucker,
mm.
and I've got his Leeway Million Miler card. He drove for Leeway, which is an Oklahoma company, his entire career. And so I understand how important, and I grew up listening to him,
yep.
how important the trucking system is. But the point is, that's fine. That's great when it works. But if we can have a little bit more robustness to our local economies, then I think overall we'll be better off, not only from security wise, but navigating crisis so that we can focus on that and not be thinking about, okay, I got to go get, you know, to Walmart so before all the toilet paper roll runs out or something like that.
So Matt, I have a question, and I hate to throw you off your game here, but I want to back up just a second. This seems like a real labor of love to you, and everything that you're doing is awesome. I'm 100% on board with everything you've said so far. But I had a question about the shop local, because this is something Brett and I have been not only preaching it, but we've been cussing and discussing this topic for a while now. What is your kind of hierarchy of shopping local? How does that look for you and 116 Farmstead as far as buying from local vendors, that type of thing? And what do you see as the benefit?
Well, there's a couple different aspects to that question. The benefit of shopping local, it feeds into what we've been talking about, and that's it's not ignoring or competing with Amazon.com or large suburban strip malls and Target and Walmart, but it is spreading out some of that attention and of course some of those dollars. The folks who I think were the hardest hit by this COVID crisis and who are hardest hit by whether it's recession or housing crisis or whatever, it's not the companies with lots of real estate and employees that can spread out those losses. It's the mom and pops and the locals.
Absolutely.
And that's one thing that we saw in Luther that just, it absolutely floored me. And that was how people supported the local shopkeepers and including ourselves, the cafe. So we do to-go meals, which are family, kind of family style. If you were going to go over to grandma's house or mom's house or whatever, and they were going to cook a meal, it's like that. So King Ranch chicken or Big Things of Enchiladas. I think tonight's, was a Greek chicken thing and then sour cream chicken enchiladas. So they come in tens. Well, everyone who was cooped up at home and couldn't go out and eat to the restaurants, well, they just kind of shifted and started buying our to-go meals.
Is that something you do every night?
We don't do every night. We used to, before this, this being COVID, we only did them once a week. We did them, I want to say Tuesday nights, either Tuesday or Wednesday nights. But now we went to do it. They were so popular and we were selling so many of them. We do a Wednesday and a Friday. And then Thursday nights, we do burger nights. So all hat beef burger night. And then Friday, we are open for dinner as well, in addition to the to-go meals. And so in terms of shop local and its importance, it's important. The dollars are important. I mean, everybody likes money. There's no question about it. But I mean, honestly, if money were the goal, then we all should be drug dealers, right? That's where the money is. It's not in selling beef. It's not in selling food. So money is great and we want to get paid well for our services and should. But when you're shopping local, you're reinforcing the community ties, the community relationships. And yeah, you can go into a certain coffee place and they may or may not spell your name right on the coffee. And that's fine. That's a transaction. But it's not the same transaction as walking in and they're already making your coffee because you live right around the corner from them and you helped them, you know, put their horse back in the pasture. That's that kind of relationships that shop local reinforces.
I agree 100%. One of the things that I've been trying to get my head around a little bit, though, in our discussions is the multiplicative aspects of spending local. Like the same dollar can get spent multiple times in the same town if there are enough interactions between the locals. I feel like it has a exponential impact on the local economy.
Right. And I think it goes beyond Takeout Tuesday. You know what I mean? With you all, you almost have a three-pronged approach. You've got it to go. You've got it there. And you can, you're also a supply chain as well.
That's right. And that was, so we, it's funny how things work out. So when we bought the building, me and my friend, we spent several months, he and I, almost as therapy, doing the tear out. So the doors are kicked open. We're pulling out sheetrock and paneling and taking down framing and insulation and knocking tile up and brick and all of that stuff. And people are walking by and they're interested. So what are you going to put in here? I don't know. What do you want to see? And we kept hearing the same things over and over again. We're sick of having to drive into town to get our hair done or our nails done or pick up our prescriptions and, you know, places to eat and grocery store. And it was at that time that Walmart had put in one of their local markets. And then on, it was one of the, as I understand it, I haven't investigated this, so this could be completely wrong, but anecdotally, that Luther Walmart little neighborhood market was one of the top grossing in the country. It was one of their best performers. And yet they decided on a nationwide basis, they were going to shutter that. They weren't going to be in that business. So they closed it. Well, that is the difference in thinking between shopping local or thinking locally and thinking on a nationwide or statewide or a larger geographic scale. You've got a grocery store that's fulfilling a need, a local need, and it's doing very well and people are pouring themselves into it. But because overall, you know, corporate policy, it gets shut down.
Right.
And that is what I understand happened to the Luther Walmart. Well, it closed down. We're opening up. And so we decided to go ahead and do a cafe and market. And part of this was to flatten some of the losses. From a business standpoint, running a restaurant is one of the worst business ideas.
It's hard.
You have all of this food, all of this labor, and you're just praying that somebody walks through the front door and buys it, right?
Right.
It would be easy if you had just one thing on the menu. We make potatoes. You can have a potato and you can put salt on it. And I'm the only one that, you know, has to be here to make it. That's pretty easy on your food cost and labor, but that's not how restaurants run. So food starts to go bad. It starts to wilt. People, you know, don't like the look of the tomatoes anymore. And so combining a farmer's market and a restaurant where I can take that tomato and make it either into salsa or I can put it on bruschetta, I can make it into spaghetti sauce, put it on a pizza, put it on all of this other stuff, or ultimately I can give it to my neighbor and he can feed his chickens or her chickens with it that we're going to buy, or we're going to buy the eggs. And so when you were talking about the dollars being exponential locally, you're right on target. You know, the dollars that are poured into our cafe, those end up being either high school advertising for the football team or local club sponsorships. I use it at the feed store there. We go down and, you know, shop retail first on Main Street. It just recycles. And, you know, the way relationships are, if I could buy something from someone that I know them, I know their family, I would much rather the dollar go to them and see them be able to use it than someone else.
Well, you know, we get a chance to talk to a lot of Main Street communities throughout Northern Oklahoma, Southern Oklahoma, Central Oklahoma, and all parts in between. And there's a huge surge in I say it all the time. It's like this renaissance that's happening in these smaller communities. And again, Luther, you guys are plugged in. I mean, you're dialed into this movement. And especially right now, it's unique 8 months ago, but it's really unique now.
Yeah.
It's a whole other ball game. It's a different way of thinking now. Buy local is not just buy local Saturdays. You know, I saw a meme that said Amazon's not supporting your baseball team. Buy local. I mean, yeah. It's true.
And that is another hopefully good thing to come out of this COVID. This is a much different form, but, and it's not buying, but you know, those scenes where you saw folks in New York who were under a much stricter quarantine than we were that would come out and they would either sing or clap at 7 o'clock when the first responder shifts would go off.
Mm-hmm.
And then you saw the folks in Italy. I mean, that is community that you can fabricate and you can try to get. But it's really good and real special and meaningful when it happens collaboratively, spontaneously, or out of necessity. And it's not for a profit motive. And that's what you're seeing, I think, with a lot of these small towns and a lot of the shop local, this craving for community and not the kind of community that it's just somebody shouting at me on social media or agreeing with me. It's transactional, but it's more relational transactional. And it's often done face to face over a counter, with, you know, someone that you're going to have repeated interactions with. And that's one of the things that we've really tried to do at the cafe. And we started with putting in a long common table. What that common table does, in fact, where this idea came from, me and my wife had gone to New York City and we were eating in a very small Italian restaurant and we were just crammed in there and we could hear we're so close to the people next to us. We heard everything that they're saying. And pretty soon, my wife's a very social person. Pretty soon she's having a conversation with, it was a mother and her son, and they were there for vacation as well. It was so natural the way the conversation progressed. I mean, we just knew, okay, now is the time for you to quit talking to us because we're going to go back to our own conversation. and it wasn't uncomfortable. It was very sweet. That's kind of a strange word. And so when we came back, and that was about the time we were thinking about opening the cafe, we thought, you know, it would be really interesting to see what happens if we make people sit really close to one another. Obviously, this was pre-COVID. This was 4 years ago.
Obviously.
And so that's what we did. People would take all of the four tops and the two tops for their privacy, and then they would sit at the ends of the long table, and pretty soon you'd have to fill in. If you wanted to sit, you'd have to fill in. And then invariably, almost universally, we saw other people doing what we experienced in New York City, and that's you start talking to the people next to you, and you start recognizing people as neighbor, whether they're your physical, you know, geographical residential neighbor or not. It was a lot of fun to watch that and also to experience it.
So Matt,
my family.
No, go ahead. No. Go right ahead.
Well, I was going to say, we're also the beneficiaries of that. We love to eat at the cafe, and so we'll eat there, and we have a large family. My wife and I have four daughters, and so we take up a lot of room, and others will come in, and they sit, you know, eventually have to sit close to us, and it sparks great conversations, and you see people showing others pictures on their phones and talking about, well, I just got back from so-and-so. I'll give you a great example of this. So I guess it was our first birthday or our second birthday, but we were having a party and I was getting there late. It was about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I think it started at 2. We were having cupcakes and a band and all of this stuff. Just everybody come down there and we'll have fun singing and stuff like that. And so I pull up and there's only, you know, one major road through downtown. That's Main Street. And I see a guy with a full, huge head of black hair. He's wearing Bermuda shorts and a Hawaiian shirt, and he's across the street peeking in the window. And so I just holler at him from across the street. Hey, are you lost? You need some help? And he said, yeah, I'm cruising 66 and my friends all left me. And I said, well, you know, come on in here. We're having a party. Well, it turns out he's an Elvis impersonator from London, England. He works, works the pub scene in London. He comes in and sings songs and, sits down with us. It was one of the funnest experiences, and it was completely random. You know, this guy gets lost on Route 66, and
what are the chances?
I know this pub Elvis ends up in my shop in Luther, America, and that is one of the benefits. I'll tell you this: Oklahoma does a fantastic job of promoting not only Route 66, but the Department of Agriculture. Their ag tourism folks are top notch, and it's not just that they can produce slick ads or put up a website. They really believe in all of the stuff that we're talking about. Route 66 is a big draw. I mean, it got London Pub Elvis to Luther, America, and I got to hang out with him for an hour and a half or 2 hours. So that's really something that we need to promote. Thankfully, Lieutenant Governor Matt Pinnell is a big believer in promoting Route 66 and has done a fantastic job in you know, getting us back on the map.
Absolutely. We had him on a couple of months ago. Super fun guy. I don't know if you've ever talked to him, but he's a blast.
Yes. Yeah. He was gracious enough to come out. So we opened a cafe location at the Oklahoma History Center last June. And so we've got the Luther shop, which is the mothership, the home base. And then we opened another kitchen and cafe at History Center. Well, Lieutenant Governor Pinnell, Secretary Arthur, and several other folks were gracious enough to come and help us do a grand opening. And yeah, he's high energy. He's definitely one of Oklahoma's best spokespersons on agritourism and Route 66 and other things. So he's a treasure.
You know, absolutely. Matt, I was looking aesthetically at the inside of the restaurant, kind of backtracking just a little bit. What I like about it is, you know, a lot of restaurants that kind of provide the same type of fare as you all, you know, you don't have wagon wheels hanging off the wall and a plow hanging from wires. I like how it's on one side, you've got this very modern aesthetic. It still captures that rustic feel and vibe. And it also has that homey, very warm, welcoming. I don't like a lot of bright lights. I really don't. I really like the inside of the restaurant. Where did you, was it kind of in your travels and kind of, have you been building up to this restaurant for a while? And did you take bits and pieces from what you've seen to kind of combine to what you have now?
So my wife and I, mercifully, have very similar tastes when it comes to design and being cattlemen, me being from Fort Worth, which is, you know, original stock town. It is very much a cowboy culture, Western culture, and so that influenced a lot of it.
But it's definitely not over the top on that from that aspect. It's very muted. I'm gonna have to say, yeah.
Yeah, I don't see a saddle in the corner for people to sit on when it's their birthday.
exactly.
Unlike certain roadhouses around town.
I'll tell you what, and this it's kind of a weird way to answer the question because they really don't fit. But so the way it's designed, some of the menu items, the concept behind it, there is a Fort Worth a restaurant called Riata's, and the guy, I don't know if he's still involved with Riata's or not, but he was a ranch hand and a really good cook. And so he opened a place out in Alpine, Texas, which is way out west Texas, a guy named Grady Spears. Well, he becomes famous or pretty well known. So he does a cookbook, and it's this cowboy cuisine cookbook. Well, I've had that cookbook for decades, and we as a family, we've cooked out of it, and it's not anything, you know, really fancy. It's comfort foods that you would have grown up eating, but there's some refinement to it. Okay. And so that was what we were looking for. We were looking for food. We were looking for the things that we sell in our market. The art that we hang on the walls, we want it to be Western culture, cowboy culture, but with a certain level of refinement.
I think you've definitely accomplished that. Looking at the outside of the building with the mural on the front of the building, I've got to feel like it's almost the shining star of downtown Luther. You guys have really gone out of your way to not only fix it up, but to make it unique and make it something different and not, you know, build it out of metal right off the highway.
Right, and it's not covered with neon and, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, well, thank you. I appreciate that. That mural was done by Bob Palmer, which I don't know if you're familiar with Bob Palmer. He would be a great guy to get on your show and to interview. So he has done murals all over the state and is a fantastic artist. And we hired him to do those panels for us. And I'm a big fan of WPA art and the whole, by the way, the Oklahoma City Museum has a great WPA art collection. And so I wanted it to have kind of that feel, and he did a bang up job. And so if you look at those panels, they go through the history of Luther, which is basically the history of every small town, from small family farms to a little bit of industrialization and then, you know, the town. One of the cool things about that panel is in the very most modern panel, there's a little kid holding a Luther Register newspaper. Well, at the turn of the 19th to the 20th century, Luther was a booming town. They had multiple mercantiles, restaurants, saloons, blacksmith. They were a train stop and huge shipper of cotton, had a cotton gin out there. And after World War II, all that just disappeared. Well, they had a daily newspaper out there called the Luther Register. And the Oklahoma History Society has a lot of those old registers microfilmed. You can read them. Fantastic. So we wanted to honor that heritage, the fact that Luther had a daily newspaper. Well, we have a local journalist. Her and her husband moved from Oklahoma City out to north of Luther. I don't know how long ago it was. It's been a little while. So kind of like how we're fulfilling that reinvigorating or reestablishing local produce, local products, local beef and a place to eat. She's doing the exact same thing except with journalism.
Yeah, we've actually got an interview lined up with her. We're going to be talking about the Pecan Festival sometime between now and then.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah, yes, she's great.
Okay. So you've talked to Dawn, and yeah, she's definitely a person to talk to in terms of small town news. And that's one of those things that, you know, everyone's screaming about fake news and, you know, this network and that network. Well, just like knowing where your beef comes from and what your rancher puts in it, you can do the same thing with your news source. And having someone who is passionate about discovering the story and getting facts out there, and of course they have opinions, but trying to be as nonpartisan or non-biased as possible, man, that is invaluable. And it's something that as papers get gobbled up and consolidated, that we're really losing, and just like losing local grocery stores and mom and pop. So whether it's journalism, whether it's the local feed store, cafe, local retail, all of those things need to be supported and really cherished and fostered. That's not to say that, and I guess I could get back to answering your question. Well, what does shop local mean to me in my hierarchy? It doesn't mean I'm going to never order anything off Amazon, because all of us are going to choose expediency and price on something. The analogy I like to use, particularly when someone asks me how much my beef costs and I tell them, they're like, well, I can get that cheaper at the grocery store. Well, absolutely you can. And you can buy your mattresses and underwear at Goodwill and get a really good deal on it. But who wants that? I mean, there are things that I'm going to spend very little money on because it's tasty and it's quick, and more than likely it's going to say Whataburger on it because I love Whataburger. But I know that beef is nothing in terms of nutritional value and community value compared to my beef. But sometime I'm going to eat a Whataburger. That I'm not going to beat myself up about it. But if I can, I'm going to spend my dollar fostering the local producer. So that's kind of my idea in terms of how to rank or create a hierarchy. And it also goes for hiring. We try to hire from local, partly out of necessity, who's going to drive from Oklahoma City to Luther. But we want those connections. And one of the reasons why we opened the place was I want people, if particularly if it's going to be their first job experience, I want them to be around other people who not only do their job well, but that treat their coworkers with respect, with trust. And so we train a pyramid or a hierarchy, and there's three tiers to this pyramid. The top tier is your coworker. That is the very first level of service. And if you're familiar with Danny Meyer, he's a famous restaurateur, wrote a book called Setting the Table. It's a fantastic book on what hospitality and service means and how to do it. I've read it several times, and it really helped my thinking in terms of this idea. And people say it about the customer being always right, and that our purpose, our entire purpose, is to make sure that our customer has a great experience. And that is true. That is one of our goals, and we certainly don't want to offend our customers, but they are not at the top of the pyramid. They're not the first level of service. The first level of service is the coworker. And that's, you know, doing your job and picking up any slack that you might see. It's, if you have a shift, you're going to show up for your shift. You're not miraculously sick on Mondays and Fridays and throwing your other coworkers under the bus. And so we like to get first time jobbers out and train them for that, because those are the qualities. You can't pay people enough money to have those qualities. You right. Either train them in and someone's going to have them, and they're going to be one of the best coworkers for life, whether they stay at the cafe or they go somewhere else. So we want to pair newbies with folks that are like that, that understand what customer service means. Customer service doesn't mean throwing your coworker under the bus, you know, throwing the chef under the bus in front of the customer.
Right.
It's demonstrating to your coworkers, I always have your back. I will treat you fairly and honestly. And then the second level is the producer. The reason we're open is to give a lot of those local producers a market where they otherwise wouldn't. I don't want to be too hard on farmers markets. They certainly have their place. But farmers markets are not great on producers. They're wonderful for consumers.
Right.
But we need more places that are more focused on producers than consumers. And so we have tried to do that. So we have folks that sell us produce that we work with to get a local producer of eggs. We're working with someone right now. That's very, very difficult to get a local egg producer. But the difference, if you've ever raised your own eggs, the difference between a store-bought egg and the egg that you have, it's night and day.
Yeah, agreed.
I mean, just from a refrigeration standpoint, nature has a way of preserving eggs where you can just set them on your counter for weeks at a time. You don't need to take up space in a refrigerator. You can't do that at the store. We have to refrigerate all eggs. That's
right.
That's health department regulations, but I'm just talking about at home and the difference between store-bought egg and natural, or it's night and day. So we like to look for those. The microgreens, locally created or locally grown and produced microgreens, this is a really big deal. And we're working on getting a local farmer up and set up and providing us local greens, because there's just no comparison between the greens that get shipped here from out of state that may last in our fridge for 5 days, or if you go to Walmart or Sam's and get their big bag of spring greens, there's no comparing those and their quality versus what you're going to get from a local producer. It's just night and day. So if we're going to get a better product and we can support someone that's passionate about that, that is local, then I mean, in our world, that's called a no-brainer.
Absolutely.
I mean, you do that all day long. And just like those new jobbers who this is their first work experience, and you want them to have a good one. You want them to be valued and to see what a good working, co-working environment looks like, you know, down to you don't scream at each other. You don't do that kind of stuff. We have producers that they're great producers. They're just not good marketers. And that makes sense. You got a guy or a gal who is, focused on springing things from the earth or pulling babies and raising, animals. They may or may not know how to market their product. And so that's where we can come in. We can use our social media presence to highlight them. We can use our menu to feature their products. So we have a local couple that creates, I'm not a big mushroom person, but even though I'm not a mushroom person, the mushrooms that they bring in and that we put in our place, they're almost works of art. They're beautiful and they're silky looking and they're exotic and they're expensive. They should be expensive. This isn't something that it was mass produced. It's just like the reason masterpieces of or works of art are expensive is because they're not mass produced and people recognize I'm going to pay some money for that. But for some reason, people don't make the same association with food. For some reason, we've been duped or tricked to believe that our food should be as cheap as possible. Well, in order to do that, you have to strip it of its culture and you have to strip it of its nutritive value and you have to work its producers to death and pay them nothing. And that's really what we want to push back against.
No, I love it. It makes perfect sense. If you're treating those people right, which it's the same argument that can be made about teachers or whatever group you feel is underrepresented, the worse you treat them, the fewer of them that are going to be around. And food producers is not one of the groups that we want to have a limited supply of, I would think. Speaking of food, though, can we kind of switch gears a little bit and talk about some of the items on your menu? I specifically have a couple of questions, but I'd love just to hear your overall idea of the menu and how you got there.
Sure. Yeah. So the menu is, again, growing up cooking from that Grady Spears cookbook, the menu is primarily influenced by cowboy cuisine, Southwestern, Tex-Mex, some Southern. And then and this kind of gets back to allowing people their room for creativity and allowing some organic growth or just evolving. So we have people that come in, they are interested in cooking. They have ideas or a certain recipe that they're good at. Well, we give them the kitchen. And so one of the high schoolers, for example, Gabe, he's now the Burger King, and the kitchen is his on Thursday nights. And he decides, all right, I'm going to do this kind of burger, and he'll, you know, have burgers with quail eggs or something else on it, or he'll have some kind of hot and spicy burger because we've got a local producer that has a bunch of banana or ancho peppers that they've brought in. And so it's not exactly seasonal, but that is one of the things that is on our hierarchy list or our to-do list. And that's cooking seasonally and getting our customers not necessarily educated, but maybe on board is a better way of putting it.
Sure.
That there are some things that if you're eating grapes in winter, you know that there are a lot of diesel fuel miles built into that grape.
Sure.
And it can say certified organic, but there's nothing clean about it. And so getting into this rhythm of eating seasonally and eating what's available, we do that. And we primarily do that with our soups. The soups, I don't know if you could classify them as a, you know, Southwestern or Tex-Mex. They vary. We have an Italian wedding soup that we do that is fantastic. We've started doing our cold soups because it's hot now. So we do a little bit of that seasonal eating with the menu. We have a standard menu, which is breakfast food and sandwiches, salads. The Southwest Cobb salad is something we put together that if you like, we call it cowboy caviar in Fort Worth, but we call it Luther caviar out here. It's kind of a corn salsa chutney kind of thing. We put that on our Southwest salad. And so it's a light, it's not heavy food. We don't have a fryer at our restaurants. We cook everything either on a griddle or in an oven. We also have a bakery. Once we opened, we've been really lucky with a series of very talented bakers. And so I bought an old house in Luther. It's right around the corner from the cafe. Half of it is kind of an office space. And then the other half is a commercial kitchen where we do a lot of the baking. So we do specialty cakes, a lot of cookies, lemon squares. We do tons of holiday baking, pies. So you mentioned the pecan festival, and we've got Couch's Pecan Orchard there right off Route 66. And so we use local pecans for our pecan bars and pecan pies, and that's pretty cool.
Well, I think they call them pecans up in Tulsa, but you know. Tomato.
They also call Coke Pop out there too, so I'm not sure what they're doing.
Well, we remember what Dan Quayle called a potato. I don't remember, but I remember it wasn't right.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe.
I absolutely love what you're doing. You answered one of my questions, by the way. I had it highlighted and bolded on my notes here, Luther caviar. So is it a cold salad with corn, beans, onions, peppers?
So the Luther caviar is, we called it Texas caviar, cowboy caviar. It was the only way my mom could get us to eat black-eyed peas. And so it's kind of like a black-eyed pea corn salsa or salad. And you can put it on chips. You can eat it by the spoonful. But we would make that every year because, at least in Texas, I think that's a thing here too. If you don't eat black-eyed peas, you're going to have horrible luck the rest of the year. And so you have to eat it on New Year's.
Right.
That's the only way we would eat it.
That explains so a lot for me.
We have Luther caviar. We do an egg salad, really great potato salad. We've just started doing pizzas. So that's something that we're trying. We've got a really good pizza dough that makes a pretty tasty pizza. And pizzas are good for folks like us that have these producers that bring in somewhat random things, and it's easier to eat seasonally with a pizza because you can just throw it on there and,
sure,
and cook it. It's a pizza. So we've been doing that.
That's awesome. I'm going to say I see the cowboy influence in the menu, and obviously we don't need to go over every item on the menu, but I see the cowboy influence. But I will say that your menu appears to be very refined. You know, the cowboy influence is one thing, but you guys have gone a long way. It's not like we're going to show up at the cattle drive and you're going to be cooking out there around the campfire. This is taking those right concepts and kind of putting your own spin on it.
And also, you look at like Cheesecake Factory, and they have a 6-page menu. You know what I mean? You have, you hit all the high notes, especially if you were born and raised and you're used to that small town sensibility, and biscuits and gravy is your go-to. You've got, you know what I mean? You have all of those with your own twist on it as well. So it's not, It ain't hoity-toity. It's still what you recognize, but maybe with a little bit of zip or zing to it. And that's what I like about your menu. Is it? I'm looking at it, and I'm not confused by the menu. It's pretty straightforward, and it has all the stuff that I like to eat. I see bacon. I see bacon multiple times, which I'm okay with that.
It is not. Well, we tried to be able to meet the needs of a wide variety of diners. So if you want to eat vegetarian, we can do that, and the menu is set up to do that. If you want to eat vegan, we can do that. If you want to eat beef or bacon, then we can certainly do that. And so, not to get too esoteric, but we all don't think alike. We all don't eat alike. We all don't look alike. We all have individualized fingerprints. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's stamped right on us. And so, in addition to eating seasonally, which is natural, mm-hmm. It's the way the earth produces its food, then in small ways, if we can reinforce that differentness and that's something to embrace and use as an opportunity for conversation, then we definitely want to do it. And so, you know, we're not in a race for purity. And so if someone's turned off by the fact that, well, I'm not going to eat any place that's serving meat, we're definitely not your place. Cause I'm a cattleman.
Right.
And if you're the person that wants to throw somebody under the bus because they don't want to eat, you know, anything created with milk, you know, we're really not your place either.
Right.
That's not the purpose of the common table. The common table is for conversations like, okay, beef is one of the most delicious things I've ever tasted. You got to walk me through your thinking on why you don't eat it.
Right.
And that is a great conversation to have. So the menu, it's obviously we have to appeal to a number of people just from a business standpoint, but it's also to reinforce there's different people that eat different things, and we need to honor and respect that.
So Matt, Harley and I, we've been everywhere, man, a little bit like Johnny Cash. And we've come across a lot of small towns that have these really good restaurants that keep these weird and interesting hours. I do like that you're closed Sunday and Monday. Give yourselves a time to recharge, take a break. You're not running yourselves into the ground. I like the hours that you're keeping. Where did the idea for the schedule? I mean, 7 to 2, that's a perfect window. 7 a.m. to 8 on Fridays, perfect window. I like that.
So Sundays are just pretty much off limits.
Right.
And fairly widely recognized in small towns, the restaurant's not open. If you want to be open, that's perfectly fine. We're just not. Mondays, and this was a tough one, and I'm glad you said that because it makes me feel better about the hours, because there's always this, man, if we were open Monday, you know, we would have that business, but it's one of those balancing. Yeah, we'd have that business, but having one day off, I've got full-time folks there. I've got definitely a full-time manager. I mean, he works his heart out there, and having one day off, it's just not enough. And so having the 2 days closed, we get beat up a little bit, but mm-hmm. Well, I wish I could go have breakfast Monday, but I think in the overall scheme, having Sunday, Monday closed is great. On the other hand, I'm really glad that other restaurants are of a different opinion so that they're open Sunday, Monday, and I can go eat there.
Right.
You know, and that it reinforces this differentness is good, mm-hmm. and coming to different conclusions on stuff like this, that the world's not going to end if restaurants open 7 days a week or if it's closed 2 out of them.
Right.
But having that variety is great, particularly in a small town. That was one thing that I think Luther has done a really good job of, and that's recognizing whether it's retail or restaurants that a rising tide truly lifts all ships.
Mm-hmm.
And that if you manage growth and if you have the right businesses in there with the right attitude, that there's plenty of local business to go around, and that it's not a, okay, it's not a zero sum game where, okay, if something new comes in, then everybody else has to suffer. I think Luther has managed that very, very well.
I'm very encouraged in what I see in Luther and a lot of the other small towns around Oklahoma. The level of camaraderie and I don't know, just kind of helping each other out has really increased here lately. And I'm seeing a lot from some of the younger generation who are stepping up and starting to take leadership roles in the communities.
Right.
And I think it's making a huge difference.
Well, and you see a lot of, and not to, and to add to that, is you're seeing a lot of the old guard kind of loosen up a little bit, allow that change, allow the growth, because there are a lot of towns that were boom towns for various reasons that are literally, if you don't know what road to turn down, there's nothing there. You know, I have family from Wanet, Oklahoma. If you went to Wanet, Oklahoma, they have a post office, I think. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of towns that aren't putting money back in, aren't taking advantage of, you know, I don't know if it's a misappropriation of funds or just a lack of interest in investors. But you're seeing a lot, the towns that are increasing that foot traffic. Sometimes it takes that one restaurant, that 116 Farmstead or whatever that individual restaurant or business is in that community to draw people in. Again, you said it before, Route 66, it is a funnel for tourism. People come from far and wide. Paul McCartney came here. If you brought a Bronco over to drive Route 66. So, I mean, you're in the sweet spot. You know what I mean? Like, you're really in the catbird seat in terms of being able to bring in that outside influence and kind of, I don't know, kind of, and grow. I love it. It's a great idea.
Yeah.
So, Matt, can you tell us how to find your restaurants, and if we want to find out more information, what's the best place for us to kind of go on the internet and check you out?
Certainly. So when we opened the Luther location, there was zero plan in opening a second location that was not on the horizon. And so we named the restaurant 116 Farmstead Market and Table, and everybody just calls it the 116, which makes sense.
Right.
That's the address. It's 116 South Main. And Luther is small enough that if you manage to make it to Main Street, you will find our place. The way Luther, the town, was built and developed, it was built around the railroad track. That's how old Luther is. It was built and designed that the main hub was right by the depot, because that's where all the action was.
Right.
Well, the way things went, the railroad, there is still a railroad track, and occasionally a train goes through there, but it's not a passenger train like it used to be, or a freight. It is a freight train, but it doesn't stop. Everything is focused on 66 now.
Right.
And well, downtown Luther is, if you were going to design a town to maximize Route 66, Luther would be a horrible example because downtown it's deceptively hard to find sometimes. But if you make it to Main Street in Luther, then you will find our place. Route 66 runs to the north of the main town of Luther. And if you go down Luther Road, it snakes around to downtown. So, you can find the Luther location at 116 South Main. Then, like I said, the Oklahoma History Center, which if you haven't gone to the Oklahoma History Center, this is one of the most underutilized treasures in Oklahoma that I have found. Maybe the Woolla Rock Museum would be up there, but this is one of those places where if you don't know about it, you walk in and your mind is just blown
right
with what they have there. That's how I felt in at the Wola Rock Museum. It's just well, for a guy like me with, you know, Western culture and Western heritage, I love that stuff. That museum was fantastic. History Museum has that and so much more. And so on its own, it's a gem. The third floor has a farmstead cafe that we opened in the summer of 2019. So just about a year right now we've been open. So you sit in our dining room, you look across the floor and out these third story huge windows, and you're staring right at the Capitol Dome and the sculpture on top. It's one of the most beautiful views in the city. And you can sit there and eat locally produced food. So we're happy to have that place open as well. You can go online. Oh, what I was saying was, so when we opened the 116, we called it the 116, but when it came time to open a second location, it seemed really silly to keep calling it 116. It just doesn't make any sense. We still call the 116 the 116. We call the History Center the OHC, but it's Farmstead Cafe. So if you go to farmsteadcafe.com, you can find maps, you can find history, our menus, all of our contact information, and we are doing the to-go meals from both locations.
Awesome.
So Linda is the manager at History Center, and I think she's doing brisket and enchiladas, and then Neil is the manager out in Luther, and I think he's doing the same thing, brisket and enchiladas.
So that's awesome. The OHC location, to our knowledge from looking at it, it looks really cool. It looks like a neat, it looks like it fits. It looks like
it does. So yeah, and I'll tell you, it's kind of the same idea, but different than Luther. So very few people go to Luther to do business. There's not a whole lot of business going on. But what we've done is we've created a space where people will come and sit and be creative, because it's a beautiful, creative space. They will do business deals. I've seen real estate contracts signed at the long table, meet with old friends. We also have couches and comfy areas. I've seen, you know, children just sprawled out taking a nap on the couch when I go in the afternoon. And that's exactly what we're looking for, is people to use the space. The History Center space is designed the exact same way. We have two long farm tables that I had made by a guy up in Green Country. I can't remember which town he was from. He built me two common tables, and then we have some round tables there. But then we also have some off to the side sitting areas with lamps and tables. And I would hope that people learn about the History Center location. They can come in, they can get a cup of coffee. If they want to get something to eat, great. If not, great. If they want to see the exhibits, they can, but they don't have to. They don't have to pay to get into the museum if they want to come up to the cafe. It's not the most convenient place. And it's just like our Luther location. And what I hope is that folks around town will utilize it, not just the museum, but also the dining space up there. It's a beautiful space, and it's right in the heart of the city. So I hope that catches on as well.
It looks great. I'm definitely going to have to check it out the next time I'm in the area. So once again, people can find out all of the information about both locations at farmsteadcafe.com. Matt, we really want to thank you for coming on the show.
Absolutely.
You've been a blast. I love getting into some of the conversation about eating local. But thank you very much for coming on the show.
Guys, thank you for doing this and taking the time, not just with me today. I've really enjoyed it. Each of the folks that you spend time with and promoting Oklahoma, it's important work, and I'm glad y'all are doing it.
Thank you very much.
There were multiple times where I looked at you and kind of gave you a hand signal like 45, 52. I don't think you knew that's what I was doing. It was I looked like I was holding up 7.
You thought we were going to run out of tape.
Well, I think I mouthed, this can this be a 2-hour interview? You know, we've never complained in the past about, hey, you know, let it run.
I don't have any complaints about, but I really felt like we could have just kept going.
We could have.
The guy's a fount of knowledge about small town America, and I love it.
I felt like there were times, though, I cliff dived into uncharted waters just to get in and weren't in edgewise, and I wasn't sure if I sounded like an ignorant, I don't know what, but yeah, Matt, wealth of knowledge, great. Again, the business model is, you know, I said it during the interview, it's a 3-pronged approach.
Yeah, but the problem with you calling it a business model, I don't think that's it. I honestly, well, it's a labor of love.
Because he's not in it. If he was in it for the money, he'd be open 7 days a week.
If he was in it for the money, he wouldn't be running it at all. True. He's a lawyer. Right. He can, you know, he could make all the money he wants just by working some extra hours at the law firm. So, it's a labor of love, and I love the fact that they've invigorated that community.
Yeah, I do too. And if you get a chance to get out there, Luther's not, especially if you're in the OKC Metro, it's not far. When I was a kid, I thought it was country. It's really
well,
not.
Well, I mean, technically it is country. It is. But it's only 20 minutes away from, you know, all the conveniences of the big city.
Absolutely. So get a chance to check out 116 Homestead. If you want to check us out, well, you're already doing it, but tell everybody. We're the Only in OK Show. Find us on iTunes. Find us on Facebook. Join the conversation.
This has been the Only in OK Show. I am Harley.
And I'm Brett.
We're out of here.
Peace.
I said we're just bringing it in.
Okay. And welcome to the show. We had a chance to, never mind, I don't ever know what I'm going to say till it's too late. Okay. 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 3, 2.